Hey folks, I'm Matt Major from Growth Mode Content, and I am very excited to be back and do a little guest co-hosting with my good friend Christine here on The Details in the Deal. We're a number of, do we know, what episode is this,
number
Christine?
Number five.
We're on number five already. I feel like we just did the other one. That, of course, is the real star of the show. Right here to my left, Christine O'Connell Moore. She is the business broker, real estate superhero in central New York, and we're very excited to help you make this podcast and talk about all the cool things that you got going on today on this show.
Thank you. I should have brought my cape with me, I guess, right?
I know.
So I think I'm really excited about the show. I'm going to have a great guest a little later on, Denise Coleman. She's a real estate, I'm a real estate broker. She's an insurance broker. And she's going to talk about the need for insurance for growing businesses. It's one thing when you first start out, but I think that sometimes people forget about what they need as they're growing. So she's going to talk about that. She's very experienced with it. Yeah. And talk about both growing businesses as well as continued acquisitions of real estate and what might be needed for insurance.
That's great. I'm glad you're going to shed some light on that, because that's one of those things that, like, I feel like so many people don't even think about. We all sort of realize you need insurance, but it's, you know, I remember when I purchased my home, it was like the night before closing, I'm calling around trying to get homeowner's insurance to satisfy the requirement that I probably should have had in advance. But that's awesome. I'm very excited to meet Denise. Christine, why don't you, before we meet her, why don't you tell us a little bit about what you've been up to? You've been out kind of expanding your knowledge, I understand.
I have. Last evening, I came back from a conference in Schenectady. It was it's called NYSCAR, New York State Commercial Association of Realtors.
Wow.
And there were about 150 commercial real estate brokers and agents and owners there. And we spent 2 days learning about things that are important to the industry, as well as a large marketing session that we had where we shared our listings and people said what they needed, what they wanted. And it was very exciting.
That's kind of neat. I was actually going to ask you about that, and I'm glad you said that's what happened. I was wondering if there was some actual deals being made. You know, obviously between these folks, you both represent buyers and sellers. Sounds like they facilitated that sort of thing.
Absolutely.
Specifically, huh?
So we have on the second day, we had a full day of marketing sessions. So what we did is we stood up, said, I have this apartment complex for sale. Here's where it is. Here's what the cap rates look like. Here's what the net looks like. And who's interested?
Wow.
You know, and, you know, 3 to 5 minutes probably on that.
Cool.
And then I know I got 6 or 7 responses to one of the things I presented.
Wow.
I got 3 responses to something else. And in most cases, you only need one buyer.
Right.
Right? So that was wonderful. And then the educational sessions were great. And in some cases, we were able to get community continuing education credits, which are required by New York State licensed brokers for the knowledge that we received.
I didn't realize that. I know in the finance world that's definitely a thing, but I didn't realize there was continuing education requirements.
Yes. So in order to get your license, you have to go through courses and take a test. And then there's continuing education courses every 1 to 2 years, depending upon where you are and when you got your license.
I really sort of wish every profession had at least some sort of requirement like that, you know?
Well, it keeps everybody up on things. I mean, sometimes you go to them because you have to.
Right.
But I almost always learn something.
Yeah.
And yesterday, or on Monday actually, one of the sessions was on wetlands, which is a pretty dry topic, no pun intended, to go through. I was sitting there thinking, boy, this is dry. But then as I really learned more about it, you realize how important it is. And there's been a lot of changes in wetlands and what's required by New York State. And then there's also a federal guideline for wetlands. So if you wouldn't want to be in both.
Yeah.
So hopefully you're in the state one, because I think there's some really good people who are able to help. But they first put the wetlands rules in the 1970s, and they've only recently been updated. So, you know, people are more environmentally conscious and more conscious about water. And obviously, upstate New York has more water than almost any place else in the country. And that's a real benefit for development. But we need to take care of it, too.
Right.
So that's really important.
Wow.
You know, one of the things they've done is regulated 1 million more acres of land. That's significant.
Wow.
And what I learned yesterday also was that you can't just look at the wetlands that may or may not be on your property. You may have no wetlands and say, okay, I'm great. But there could be wetlands on either side of your property or on one side or in the back. Mm-hmm. And so there's you know, depending upon where you are and how large it is, there's setbacks. And so you need to make sure that you know what's surrounding your properties also.
Yeah, water and chemicals and things that you might be doing that disturb wetlands, they don't really know your property lines. You know, they don't necessarily respect those. So
they can change.
See, yeah, yes. Right.
Yes. So it's definitely not something to take for granted.
Sure.
And it's important, and you wouldn't want to get too far into a deal without knowing where the wetlands are on your property.
I can imagine.
Yeah, it can take you from having 50 acres available to 30 acres available.
Oof.
And then, you know, this is an example, and that makes a big difference.
Is that something, Christine, that in a deal someone is required to disclose if they have that information, a prior owner knows about those conditions?
I would certainly suggest they do, because that's something you're going to discover during due diligence if you don't disclose it, if it's not disclosed up front. And that's the sort of thing that could kill a deal.
Yeah.
Because if you want to build a certain size building or housing that's going to require a lot of sewers, for example, you want to know that up front, because you want the deal to work. That's the most important.
Yeah.
Is that the deal's going to work. And you don't want to discover these things that can be drawbacks.
Sure.
2-3 months in, you've paid your lawyers, you've paid your surveyors, you've paid lots of people to do the things that need to be done, and then all of a sudden you find out New York State isn't going to allow you to do this.
Yeah, that was my concern.
Right. Yeah. No, it's important, and it's all part of, I think, not to promote myself or my industry, but it's all part of working with somebody who knows what they're doing too. And a good real estate broker should know how to do this and know how to find the contacts to get you through what the state needs too.
Now, not to change topics a little bit, but you were telling me some other sessions that you were taking there, and things, as my grandmother would say, are going to pot, I guess.
Uh-huh.
You had some sessions on cannabis.
We did. Cannabis and how it relates to real estate, and very much like if you wanted to open a liquor store.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of rules that you have to follow from New York State. New York State was not the first state to allow cannabis sales, but they've been one of the slower states to really roll things out.
Sure.
And there's been a lot of issues with it. One of the biggest problems is that you have to, in order to apply for a license, you have to control the real estate that you're going to go in, which means you either have to have a signed lease or you have to own the building and show the deed to New York State. Well, if you're leasing and a landlord's going to hold up their building, they're going to want to be paid for that.
Right.
And you don't know if you're going to get a license. And so that you really have to be very well funded to get started in it. You can't just say, I'm going to just open a corner store and all of a sudden be selling pot.
So I didn't really. So you actually have to have the location at the time you apply?
Yes. And there's a lot of reasons for it.
Oh, wow.
But I think it does, it shows that you've done your homework.
Yeah.
It shows that you know where you want to be and that you're not just applying willy-nilly, because so many people apply for their licenses. And you have to be a certain feet away from churches, from schools, from any youth or oriented organizations. And you can't be too close to another pot store, another cannabis store. So that's really important to know. And the state now has a list of where they're all located.
Uh-huh.
And also in 2014 was when municipalities were allowed to opt in to allow people to open cannabis stores. 54% of the municipalities in New York State opted out.
Gotcha.
They could still opt in, but right now that's the number that's opted out. So it really makes those townships and cities and villages who opted in more valuable. Really.
Sure.
The real estate in them are more valuable because it can be a long ways between cannabis stores.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then you go to some places and you see them, you feel like you see them every four blocks.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's like you said, because they are only sort of allowed in a few places.
Right. And the state allows gives you 2-year licenses, which makes it tricky for leases, too. Because normally a landlord would want a 5 to 10 year lease at least.
Yeah.
And that I think that will probably push more people into owning their buildings because a landlord may not be friendly to a 2-year lease.
Yeah.
Their bank may not be friendly to a 2-year lease. And banking is tough, too, because they require that you have at least 35% of the money down to buy a building. They will only fund 65%. And insurance is tricky too. There's only about 4 or 5 insurance companies that will provide insurance for the business.
Yeah, it's a wild thing.
Yeah, it is, and not for the faint of heart. I mean, you feel as like the world is changing really fast with it, but at the same time, there are a lot of hoops.
That's, you know, when you say you only get a 2-year license and you talk about the lease, you know, some of these, as we've seen in the news, are, like you said, they aren't even guaranteed. So there's folks that have applied for this license, which now what you're telling me is that means they've had a property and they had to have been paying for this property for well over 2 years already.
Absolutely.
So I guess maybe from the landlord's side, you can fulfill that lease, even though you may never actually sell pot here. But
well, that's true. But most landlords don't want an empty space.
Right.
You know, because they may have other tenants in the building.
Well, it's just bad for all parties.
It's bad for all parties. And in November 2023, there was litigation.
Mm-hmm.
And anyone who applied for licenses for that period of time, that started that period of time, don't even know yet.
Yeah,
because of the litigation. So I think a lot of people think it's just super easy to do.
Right.
But I learned a lot, and I know that I think there's only certain landlords who would really want to rent out because mm-hmm. of some of these requirements. You know.
Wow.
And parking and other things that are needed to sure. make sure that you're providing good customer service.
Of course, yeah. of course. And then you also learned about some AI at this.
I did, and my goal for
AI
the summer
is
AI is everywhere, and the topic was AI in commercial real estate, and there was a gentleman who spoke, and he was probably 75 years old, and he said he said two months ago he told everyone he was too old to learn something new, and then someone showed him what he could do, and he decided he was no longer too old to learn something new, which I thought was great.
That's awesome.
It gives everybody in the room hope that we can do that too.
Yeah.
Right. So one of my summer goals is to really dig into AI and use it in my company, but they were showing some examples of how you could use it. Property comps was big because you can spend a lot of time researching property comps.
Gotcha.
Everybody's talking about using AI to respond to your email.
Mm-hmm.
And also, we discussed data analysis. And also, if you have multiple offers on a property, you know, AI can look at those offers and tell you what's the same, what's different, what they recommend. But we also did discuss the pros and cons of it too, and how you can't trust everything. It's still mm-hmm. it's still learning, like we're still learning.
Yeah.
Right. So I think it's a trust but verify, as Ronald Reagan said.
Yep.
And I will definitely do that. I'm one of those people who likes to double check everything.
Sure.
So I will do that. But if it can save you a lot of work up front,
yeah,
and then you can check your sources, I think it's going to be very exciting.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That was actually in some of the things that I've been sharing with you. We did some design mock-ups where I was able to take a photo. Originally, I started with a photo of the existing space. I just described what my vision was for it, and it came out with a pretty darn good representation of that. So I can definitely see the value in that.
Absolutely. Funny stories too, you know. Spreadsheets were tossed out, but there was a rhinoceros in the corner. Nobody knows why, you know. So I think it's all part of of all of us learning, you know, and checking our data. But I think it's exciting, and that's the kind of work that allows you to have more face to face time with people, and to be out networking and doing the things that we need to do and finding properties.
Christine, before we turn the page on this conference, I just want to go back to a little bit in the beginning. We were talking about some of the listings in the marketing session and stuff you were having. And you talked about how you got some bites on the listings that you presented. What were any really interesting or unique or any standout properties that you heard from some other folks at the conference that they had to sell?
Great question. I think that one of the things I found most interesting is in Watkins Glen, there's a property that's a hotel with a house. And for some reason, it can no longer be a hotel. I think the change in zoning, maybe.
I see.
But it could be Airbnb. So, and it's Watkins Glen, which is a big tourist area.
Yeah.
For those who don't know, you know, in southern part of upstate New York. And I thought that's an interesting opportunity because it's that you have the raceway there and hiking trails and a fabulous downtown, one of my
gorgeous
favorite
area.
Downtowns
in
upstate New York, small town downtown.
Yep.
And they have they do this really cool thing in their downtown. They have directions on the streets, right, embedded right in the sidewalks. And it tells you go north and you go to such and such place and go south. And it points in those directions. And I thought that's really useful for an area that has
absolutely.
So many tourists. So I think Watkins Glen is really cool.
That's awesome.
And there's a very cool apartment complex for sale in Binghamton and Endicott, New York, just outside of Binghamton, that has all townhouses, which are very popular, and many acres for additional land, too.
That's great.
So that's something I'm definitely going to explore.
I was going to say, that's got to be very interesting to you, because obviously that's sort of in your wheelhouse and your range for the most part, right?
Absolutely. I've done a lot of business in Binghamton.
Yeah. So that's got to be kind of neat when you go to these events and hear about these things that You know, they're not. I've always found very interesting about real estate. It doesn't even have to necessarily be your deal, but you can make it your deal on the other side and
absolutely
and enjoy these things.
I've always said that I'm happy to take half of something instead of none of
sure.
So co-broking is what it's all about when you can.
So speaking of neat listings,
yes.
What have you got since we spoke last?
Well, we talked last about what I called a 27-unit apartment complex in Rochester, New York. I found out it was a 26-unit complex
gotcha.
Because when I reviewed the rent roll, it said 27. Turns out there's no 13.
Oh, wow.
So, that was a big surprise to me. And I said, okay, we have 26 units, not 27.
So it goes from unit 12 to unit 14.
Yes, yes.
Wow.
So you know, you got to look, the yep. details are in the deal, right?
Yeah, yeah, right.
So even that threw me for a minute, but then I figured out what it was. And much like hotels that don't have 13th floors and,
yep.
and apartment buildings in New York wouldn't have a 13th floor usually. But it's a very cool building, 512-514 Lake Avenue, which is a pretty major commuting route in Rochester. If you're downtown, it'll take you right up to the lake.
Gotcha.
To Rondacoit Bay and the lake up that way.
Yeah.
And it's a combination of studios, 1 and 2 bedroom apartments. It overlooks the Genesee River.
Wow.
Now, it overlooks via a cliff, so I can't really call it waterfront housing.
I see.
However, it's kind of cool to see the Genesee River rushing by, and there's balconies on the back of the building.
Wow.
So we have both a pro forma and an actual rent roll, and there are definitely some undermarket apartments in there. The owner has put $90,000 in capital improvements into the property in the last few years, including 2 new roofs.
Oh, wow.
Roofs are usually the number one thing
of
you
course.
Find needs to be replaced. So I think that's really important. New heating system as well as a new hot water system.
Wow.
So a lot of the major capital improvements have been done.
That's incredible. It sounds great. And the pictures of the place look phenomenal.
I think it's a good investment, and it's properly priced. It's sometimes you find properties today overpriced.
Yeah.
I really feel that this one is properly priced.
Does that you think that'll equate a quick sale?
I do.
Yeah.
We've already had a lot of interest, and tomorrow I have 4 showings.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
Wow. I know you've answered this before, Christine, but I'm always just curious. So you've got this apartment place. You've got 26 places. I'm assuming many, if not all of them, have tenants in them. How do you go about showing a property that's sort of almost 30 other people's homes as well?
It's tricky. Obviously, you don't start too early in the morning because
sure.
you don't want to bother people. I am meeting the owner there tomorrow. That's not usually the case, but I think he's got his relationship with the tenants, and
oh,
it's the
great.
First time we're showing the property. And then he can explain it the way that he wants to explain
sure.
it to them. There are a couple of vacancies, so we'll be able to show those properties. And then he has a couple of people who do work for him on the property, so we'll be able to show those units too.
Gotcha.
Generally, in a showing, you would before you get into a contract, you would show one of each type of unit.
Gotcha.
So we're not going to go through 26 units tomorrow.
Sure.
That'll be done during due diligence.
I see. So even though you're not necessarily doing it ahead of time, at some point before the deal closes, you really do still kind of investigate every foot of the place.
That's part of the due diligence.
Yeah.
And I always offer people the opportunity to look at every apartment. Some people will do that.
Sure.
I've been through 250 apartments in 2 days.
Wow.
With people. Usually it's a pretty fast
yeah,
go-through.
Right, right.
And then other people, I'll hand them the rent roll, and I'll ask the buyer to tell me what apartments he or she wants to see. Because I don't want to choose those. I don't want to feel like I'm setting
yeah.
up the best apartments
yeah.
for them. And so they will choose what they want to see, and then we'll make arrangements in advance if they're occupied.
That's great.
And part of the lease generally is that you can have access to the apartments.
Okay.
Yeah,
that makes sense.
With notice,
yeah,
of course.
Right, right.
Yes.
And then kind of changing gears, not necessarily a place where you're going to store some people, but you might store some incredible animals. And I feel like, I don't know if it's just because we've discussed this offline or not, or if we discussed this on the last one, or the fact that I actually tried to pitch this to our guest on a previous podcast today.
Oh, thank you.
Who was talking about how much they love horses. You have a gorgeous horse farm for sale.
I do. And it's very exciting because this is not something I've done before. This is a referral from one of my clients, which is always so flattering to get the referrals. This is in Sandy Creek, New York, which is near Pulaski, salmon capital of the world. Great recreation area. It was built a little over 10 years ago. 7 stalls. Gorgeous, gorgeous wood finishes inside. Hayloft above that you can also has drops into the stall so you can drop the hay as well as feed for your animals in there. water outside of every one of the stalls, tack room, one bedroom apartment that someone could live in and produce revenue for you, as well as a manager's trainer's office upstairs, which could also become another apartment.
Gotcha. Incredible.
Beautiful. A fenced in, almost 4 acres of fenced in paddocks and training rings. You could do shows there if you wanted to do that. And next door to it is 2 additional acres that the same people own that could be purchased. And if you wanted to build your dream house and have your horse farm next door, it would be perfect.
Wow. What an awesome, awesome deal.
It's very awesome. And it's priced at about half of what they have into the property.
At no point is any of this really a small amount of money, but in the grand scheme of things, as you're looking at price values, you know, you have everything you talked about for less than $500,000. That doesn't seem possible in today's world.
Right.
So,
I mean, what you have to look at is location.
Yeah.
You know, it's not an area that everybody knows of and wants to be. And if this was on, you know, one of the lakes right around the Syracuse area or Saratoga or, you know, somewhere in Kentucky, it would be worth millions.
That's the selling point to me is nobody knows where it is.
Yeah. Well, I talked to someone yesterday at the show that I was at, uh-huh. and she has a client, and the client loves to spend their summers in upstate New York. And they love the Salmon River, and it's very close to the Salmon River. So you really only need one buyer for the property.
Yeah.
And I was thrilled to have 3 people be interested. I think they have clients that are interested.
Yep.
So that's pretty exciting.
I know salmon is a big deal when we stayed up in that area for a Profound event a while ago.
Yes.
And the facility had spots for you right inside the door to wash off your waders from salmon fishing.
Right. Yes.
Like it's a real deal when they're building facilities just for this purpose.
Absolutely. Kind of almost, you know, a high-end glamorous place that had sinks or washes right in the lobby.
Never seen that before.
No, I had neither, and I suspect they would know how to clean your fish and prepare it for you for dinner if you wanted them to.
That's a whole nother. Now I'm getting hungry. Let's just get a little update for those following along on what's happening just in our local region. We got some things happening all over Syracuse and Rochester and
absolutely
points in between.
I think it just came out yesterday or the day before that Regency Towers up on James Street in Syracuse was sold. That is a 237-unit apartment complex, high-rise, plus four or five commercial establishments on the first floor, including Attilio's restaurant, for those who might be familiar with the building.
Oh, okay.
So the owners are a group that has a number of local properties, and they've partnered with a group that are from down south.
I see.
And have a portfolio down there. So I think that'll be interesting to see what they do.
Wow.
And James Street, you know, as we've spoke about, is very hot right now.
Yeah.
I just sold 2 apartment complexes on James Street at full asking price. And there's a number of other properties that are on the market. And I think it's going to be a great place for all types of housing, from workforce housing to high-end housing.
It's James Street's such an interesting place, especially when you drive up and down and you see the very old, very historic properties and homes and big buildings. It's really great that folks are putting some love into it.
I really like seeing that, and it's on a bus route. It's mm-hmm. It's very convenient to downtown and very convenient to the eastern suburbs. Anywhere you want to go, really. Pearl Street, there's an entrance onto 81.
Yep.
So I think we're going to see more and more things happening there, and I'm excited to see what new money and new owners do to the Regency Towers also.
That's awesome. And then out in Rochester, we got some stuff happening, right?
Yes, the Columbus Building, which is a historic building in Rochester, is being converted into 75 units.
Wow.
They just got approval to assume a pilot agreement, which is payment in lieu of taxes that the city of Rochester is providing. And you can't always assume those, so that's a good sign that the buyers are heavy hitters and they can do the job.
That's great. And now was that previously a commercial building and it's being turned into residential? Is that what's happening
it's
here?
It's been a combination over the years.
I see.
But I think this will be a full renovation and
gotcha.
You know, repositioning of the property.
Cool.
Yes. And we're seeing more and more office buildings being converted into apartment buildings,
right.
too.
That's a very interesting trend, but good.
Yes.
Make good use of the space. Down in Colgate, I had a friend that went to Colgate back
Great
in the day.
Great campus.
Gorgeous yes. place. We're expanding. We're adding some more student housing. It sounds like
they're building student housing and kind of a new village for them. And I think they're trying to have more for their students to do. You know,
uh-huh.
the school, it's very competitive now for these higher end schools to get the right students.
Yeah,
get the students they want. You know?
Right.
So they're going to build more toward Main Street, and have more things for the kids to do, the students to do, and to in places for them to live. And that gives them a little more control over the quality of the living quarters.
Yeah. No, that's great. Yeah. Used to be a great pizza joint right on the main strip there. I don't know if it's still there or not.
Well, pizza is popular with college students. When I went to Syracuse, Cosmos was the place to go. And nice. And every time I go up to Marshall Street, I still miss it.
Oh, yeah. So many good places.
Absolutely.
And then I think one other thing we got is also in Rochester. Is this a hotel? What do we got going on here?
Well, it is. It'll be a brand new hotel. Citygate Hotel LLC is building it. And we talked before about the trend towards labeling the properties. So this is going to be a combination of a Westin and a Marriott.
Oh, wow.
And that's really on trend now. This will be exciting. It's in the Brighton section of Rochester, which is on the eastern part of Rochester. Mm-hmm. And I'm very close to the highways, in a really walkable area. And I think that people will really like staying there.
That's neat. That's neat. I wonder, is one room Westin and across the hall it's a Marriott style room? How do they mix that up?
Generally not. Usually it's towers, yeah. Sections and towers.
You can share
check-in desks like we've talked about and amenities. You know, you won't need two gyms. You know, you won't need
Makes sense.
Laundry rooms, that sort of thing.
Makes sense. That's great.
Yeah. So there's a lot of things happening, and every day I'm reading about exciting things happening in upstate New York.
Our region is just exploding, bursting at the seams,
yes.
And you are on the forefront of putting people in the places they need to make this happen. So I think that's pretty awesome, Christine.
Thank you. I'm really hoping that we'll be able to bring more and more of that every month to the people who are listening.
Like I said, you're in a great position because there's no shortage of new things happening all the time. So
it helps.
It's great. It's great.
Yes.
Christine, this has been awesome talking to you. I'm going to dip and let you take over the show with your incredible guest who's going to join us here in just a moment.
Great. Thank you again
for having me and keeping me up to date on everything that's happening here in New York State.
Well, we're back now, and earlier I said that we were going to be talking with Denise Coleman, but we are talking with Denise Armstrong now, a newlywed. Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
I've recently met your husband. He's lovely.
Yes.
Yeah. So that's all new things in your life?
Yes, a lot of good things. And that was in the past, it's 2 months old, you know,
right.
It's so new and refreshing, and it's been wonderful. The transition. Changing my name on a lot of things is different. That's why the Denise Coleman Agency will stay Denise Coleman Agency, but I will be Denise Armstrong.
Before we get into the area of insurance, can you tell us
a
little bit about you and your background and how you got into the business?
Well, I got into the business from a friend who said I should get into insurance. So it was around 10 years ago. And I started out and I got my life accident health. And then when I was working at, it was Honda City at the time, as an internet sales manager, I was approached from a hunter, headhunter, you know, type of person who said, hey, I think you should, you know, look into this. What do you think? And I said, I don't know. Tell me some more. Within, I think it was 2 weeks, I had signed up, got my certifications, went through all that. And then those were completed, of course, within a few months. But and then I dove right in, opened up an agency. And now it's here. It's I can't believe it's been that long. But I bought an agency that was already established, and she works still with me, which is wonderful. She has 40 years experience, which is fabulous.
Yes.
So I have my own little, you know, personal tutor. And it's just been history ever since. So I started out in working with cars and stuff, which got me, that's mostly what I do, you know, is home, auto, life. And then I also do, you know, commercial, boats, ATVs, whatever you need insured. I protect your well-being.
Oh, that's fabulous. And it's good not to have to go to too many people to do that.
Exactly.
Too.
Yep.
So you're a small business owner.
Yes.
And one of the things I wanted to talk about today is insuring small businesses.
Yes.
And because sometimes you start out as a really small business and then you grow, and that's
mm-hmm.
probably how, you know, you started also and you
yes.
acquired a company.
Mm-hmm.
So can you give some advice to people and talk about insurance that might be needed for companies that are growing?
Well, yes. Basically, make sure when you are insuring, there's different types of you know, your liability insurance, and then, you know, you need your commercial for your business, for your actual physical building. So you need different insurances, and you need to look into that. You need to know, like, if you're leasing a building or if you own the building. There's different, obviously, policies for each one of those. But make sure when you are insuring your building that you know everything about that building. And it's up to code. And because those are things that they need to know. I mean, it sounds silly. They're like, well, when was the plumbing put in? And when was the wiring done? And it's like a lot of the people I talk to are like, I have no idea. I'm like, well, you have to find out this information. And another big thing I have with companies that are growing, someone starts out without employees. And then as they add employees, it's like, please do not put employees on your payroll listed yet. You can get them hired or whatever you're going to do. But when you're going to start paying them, you have to get workers' comp.
Right.
And paid family leave and disability paid family leave. Because I had a client who had not done that, and it was like thousands. And it was only for like a couple months.
And were those penalties?
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, it was very extreme. So that's my advice. So know your business. Know what you need. A lot of companies I do insurance for, commercial insurance, for like their general liability. A lot of clients I have for their businesses are growing. They're adding equipment is coming in. They're adding employees. Their payroll, you know, there's so much to it. Just know what you're doing and get the best advice that you can. And hopefully you have an agent that knows what to do and to guide you in the correct, you know, way to go.
So an agent who's experienced in commercial.
Right? Yes.
Yeah. How many times a year would you recommend reviewing your insurance?
Well, with commercial, they're normally year policies. So I think once a year would be good. Unless you're almost reviewing them every time you add a piece of equipment or take a named insured off or an additional insured or additional interested. You know, there's all different things that are happening all year through every time you do something. Like, you know, that's an endorsement that you have to do to add somebody on or take somebody off. So in a way, you're almost reviewing it because it's almost like, okay, now I show this many vehicles and I show this piece of equipment. Do you still have those? And then it's like, oh, wait a minute. No, I just sold that.
Right.
So I think throughout every time you do an endorsement, it's a good time to review it so that when you get a year later, you do have the correct information.
So many entrepreneurs own multiple mm-hmm. companies and multiple properties, and they need an umbrella policy, liability policy.
Yes.
How do you advise on that?
With an umbrella policy, you normally have to make sure that will cover the building, the home, your auto, and they all have to be at certain levels in order to write an umbrella policy. Normally, umbrella policies, I believe, start at like $250,000 to $500,000. So you have to make sure everything is at that level. And if it isn't, then you have to change everything to meet those requirements for an umbrella policy. So, yeah, I do a lot of umbrella policies.
So those are minimum requirements?
Yes.
Underlying?
Yes, that's okay. Where it has to be written, starting from. Mm-hmm. And then you can do, you know, your 1 million with a 2 million aggregate, 2 million, 2 million, you know, it goes up from there.
How do you figure out the right amount for the umbrella policy?
That would be what are all your assets? What do you have to protect? What if someone sues you and they see you have a lot
right.
of assets, they're going to go for it, right?
Sure. The company with the most insurance.
The company with the, right. So you want to make sure that you cover your assets. Basically, that's what it's for, mm-hmm. is to cover you if somebody sues you.
Okay. Thank you.
Oh, absolutely.
So someone's buying a business. Mm-hmm. What would you recommend to them if they want to check out the insurance that the business has now, what's been covered, and putting a new policy on for a business?
Okay. I'm not sure if that's up to the client that's selling, if they would let you see the policy that they had before, that would be great.
Let's assume they will.
Let's assume they will. Okay. Then I would look that over and see, just to make sure, to see what coverages they have. Make sure all everything is covered that you need. There's different coverages that you might require other than the ones that they had. It also depends on what you are putting in that building. If you're acquiring a building, but you're not even going to be selling what that other person was selling or manufacturing or whatever they were doing, you want to make sure that yours is tweaked to fit your specific needs. Yes, it's good to have a reference because it'll kind of give you a guideline of what the insurance would be.
Sure.
But if the risk changes, it will change the premium.
So when you're reviewing the financials of a company you're acquiring, you can't assume that the what they're paying for in insurance is what you would pay for insurance.
Correct. And because insurance is actually, people do not understand credit scores, people.
Right.
Your credit is so important. It reflects on every loan you get. It's how your premium is rated for your auto, for your homeowners. Everything is based on a credit score. And if you have a company that has not built up a good credit score, work on that. That would be my biggest thing for people to take away, is your credit score means more than you think it does.
So if you're that's interesting. If you're acquiring a company that has a bad credit score, that could be detrimental.
They could have really high premiums.
Interesting, because they would because often those are the kind of companies you find for sale, right? They're in trouble.
Probably.
Right.
But they might not have been when they wrote the policy, uh-huh. though. They could have turned into a lower credit score, but you don't know. There's so many factors. That's why you really got to look at it and find out, you know, if you find out that they wrote that policy 20 years ago.
Right.
Well, they could have a really low policy, but they're probably underinsured because they haven't added on and grown their policy with their business if their business has expanded.
Makes sense.
It's all based on risk. And there's a million questions when it comes to commercial insurance, like things you wouldn't even think about.
Excellent. Well, that's new to me to think about it that way.
Yeah.
So I appreciate that information.
Absolutely.
So earlier in the podcast, we talked about cannabis and real estate.
Mm-hmm.
And I was at a conference this week, and they talked about how hard it is to insure cannabis companies.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm wondering if you have experience or knowledge regarding this, or what kind of advice you might have.
I am looking into learning to see how I can write cannabis. It's so new. There's so many things changing out there that are happening. What businesses are able to be, you know, leasing buildings to be in business. I know there is a lot of restrictions on payrolls and what banks do cash checks from a cannabis company. So those I do know, and I do have some contacts that are able to do payroll for specific cannabis companies, so that those bank checks are cashed. But other than that, I haven't written one yet, but I'm looking into it so that I can.
Because it's obviously a growing business.
It is, yes. Amazing,
right?
How that has taken off. Yes.
Yes. And another thing, just to sort of cap things up that we talked about earlier, was AI and real estate, but I'm wondering how AI is impacting insurance.
I think AI has a huge impact in insurance. I use it a lot when I'm writing letters that I need to, you know, for clients, and to give you different insight and different ideas, because you can obviously be like, oh, yeah, that's right, I forgot about that. You know, it gives you different ways to think about certain things, different policies and how they are carried out. And I think AI is, I like AI. I think it's good as long as it's used properly.
Sure.
And not in a negative way to, there's fraud. And that is a huge thing. I know that we deal a lot with cybersecurity. And I think as long as things are maintained correctly or used properly, I think it's a great tool to use in insurance.
That's great. And we'll see more and more of it, I'm sure.
Absolutely.
Yes.
It's the beginning.
Great. Denise, is there anything else you want to talk about before we finish up?
No, I'm very excited for you. I just love this. I'm so happy. I want to get you out there and promote you as much as I can, because I think this is great for people to have, you know, it's a very laid back setting and to really learn. I've listened to your other podcasts and I'm like, oh, that's a good idea. Or, you know, it just brings insight to different things, especially, you know, being in insurance and what you're doing with real estate. It's very helpful.
Well, thank you.
I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
I appreciate that. And I would try to be educational as well as promotional, of
yes.
course. So I think it's a good combination for people.
I love it. Keep it up.
Thank you. And thank you to Growth Mode Productions, too. They've been really yes. great to work with. And we appreciate everybody here.
Yes.
So, good. Well, we're going to sign off now, but stay tuned for future podcasts. We're going to hopefully next week have a banker join us, or next month to have a banker join us, as well as some people who are doing some unusual things in putting together partners in the real estate markets.
Oh, very nice.
Yes. Thank you, Denise.
Thank you.